everyone, to episode number 4 of Robot Radio. We're back after a week of rest and relaxation and car accidents. This is Greg Stanwood along with Andrew Martin. And, well, we've arrived at the first week of actual spring training, actual baseball. How do you feel?
Oh, it's a good, refreshing feeling to know there's people out there playing some sort of professional baseball right now. It's been a long, dark, cold winter.
Full of hibernation and yeah. Absolutely nothing happening, I guess.
Yeah, the sun's shining right now. I'm pretty pleased about that.
The sun, like, here, yeah, it's been raining here, but I like the rain, so.
Yeah, I like rain too, but in Denver, it's been kind of gloomy. We've had a lot of cold lately, and it's still pretty chilly out there, but, no, sun's beating down everywhere, and it's looking nice. USA Hockey's going on. It's a good day.
I guess moving on to any news that's happened in the last couple weeks, in terms of just baseball signings in general, the biggest recent one has been Felipe Lopez, who we talked about a couple weeks ago. There was never really any chance we were going to sign him, but it's still relevant that now he is back in St. Louis. He was there in 08, I believe. Joe Bimel still hasn't signed, but the Mets offered him something. Apparently, he is not yet ready to commit. We're still in on Jose Julio Ruiz, I believe. There's been like a week of saying, oh, he's almost ready to sign. He's going to sign tomorrow. He's going to sign in 6 hours. Nope, nothing yet.
I'm interested in Ruiz in a sense, but I kind of feel like he's just going to be another Joe Koscianski, Ryan Sheely type, and it seems like a kind of depth that, I mean, yeah, it would be great if we have catastrophic injury to have a guy who's, you know, ready, and I say that as loosely as possible, to maybe step up. But if Helton goes down, God forbid, we have Hop to take over first base, which, I mean, in the event of a Helton injury, which would be very not ideal, having Hop play first base in that unideal situation would in turn be ideal.
The only other thing to keep in mind is that, I mean, Helton's only got 2 years left guaranteed here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's anybody really out there ready in our organization who could possibly take over for him immediately in I guess, 2012 if we needed him to.
Well, and once again, that kind of goes back to a Brad Hop kind of thing. I mean,
right, of course, Hop might be gone too. So
this whole, you know, Hop backing up first base thing is such a circular thing because, well, we want to trade Hop because we want to get the best outfielders playing, but if we trade Hop, then he's not going to be around to, play first base when Helton's career is finished. But then my biggest question isn't so much, you know, hey, he can do it. It's more the issue of can he do it in 3 years. I mean, and I'm saying 3 years, I know that, you know, after 2012, but I'm saying 3 years, you know, maybe Helton's, you know, I think you see where I'm going with this here. Hop isn't exactly an, he's not a Helton type of elite talent, and he's going to be kind of getting into his downslope years by then, so, I mean, he'd be a decent stopgap, but it'd be great to have someone else coming back up, you know? So back to Ruiz again, but he's 25 or 26, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I still can't find a lot on Ruiz. I tried to look him up when his name first got brought up, and there wasn't a lot out there other than he's been attracting attention from 6 or 7 teams. I don't think we're going to get him. I would not really consider us a front runner.
Well, he's going to be a Triple-A player for us, so I can't really imagine that we're going to want to put that much money into a guy who's going to play Triple-A ball for us.
Right. Apparently, he does want a multi-million dollar signing deal or whatever.
This is the problem with getting a lot of the Latin players, whether they be from, you know, Cuba in this case, or, you know, Dominican Republic, Venezuela, whatever. We don't always have the best stats to look at. So, I mean, we can see some vague scouting reports, a couple sentences written about them. And sometimes that's all you really need to, I mean, for a depth kind of signing. But when we're talking about a guy who's wanting a big signing bonus, I want to see what he's actually done. And it's not as if, you know, Baseball Reference - Cuba is a very, you know, existing site. In fact, it's not.
Well, one of the other signings we did get was this guy named Yohendi Yeminian. I certainly don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but we were interested in him for a decent amount of time. There were rumblings about us signing this guy last July or June or something.
I saw Ringlesby updates back from July.
He is just another example of the kind of player that we really can't find a lot on. However, there is video of him throwing on YouTube.
I found a brief scouting report from back in July 09 of about all the big Latin signings coming up and who the most prominent names were. And Heminian appears to, almost have like a Jeff Francis skill set in a way. Maybe not with a wicked changeup, but a high 80s to low 90s top out fastball. Mixes in a sinker, knows how to throw a curveball, stuff like that. And whenever you see the word sinker thrown in there, you know the Rockies are at least a little bit interested.
Okay, so the major news, at least in my opinion, from the actual team down in Tucson right now is Corpus's hamstring has been hurt. He spent about 5 days just out and he was doing bunting practice, and that was about it. But apparently yesterday he got back on the mound and was doing all right.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, he needs to have a good spring.
He needs to have a very good spring. He needs to do a lot of head turning. And I got into a discussion about Corpus, I think it was last week or something like that. And looking at the advanced stuff, he's still striking out a decent number of guys. He's still not walking anybody, and he's still keeping his home runs very much in check. But we all know that's not the entire story. And I don't know. I'm hoping that 2008, it was just, I got my contract, I'm going to coast now, and, bad call there. Then 2009 had his elbow problems. And I'm hoping really that, apparently he has a child now, and that's kind of turning his mentality around, I really need to work at this so I can, earn my contract. And then once his contract's up, then maybe I can step out there and make another contract.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him. He was a great asset in 07, and I would love to have an effective Manny Corpus in the seventh inning.
Having Corpus, Palmeiro, Betancourt, Street, and then potentially even, good Morales, hopefully. And then, maybe Matt Dilley's deceptive delivery, not everyone's caught up with it yet, et cetera. We got the makings of a good bullpen here.
And that's where I was headed next, actually, was our discussion about the bullpen. Since we've covered the bench, we've covered the starting eight, we've covered the starting rotation, and really all that's left is to talk about the bullpen. And I will say up front that this is actually the area of the team that I'm most worried about. You mentioned that you have that they think they have the makings of a really good bullpen, so I don't disagree with that at all. I think it has a great deal of potential, but at the same time, when I look at our projected seven players, which we'll obviously get into in a second, I just feel like I wish this were better. Or I wish I had more confidence in these people.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be, I don't think I've ever been happy with a starting bullpen that we've had. So maybe it's just me wishing that we could somehow magically have seven closers. That's obviously just a completely unrealistic fantasy sort of thing.
Hey, pipe dreams are important too, but there's one thing I kind of want to temper a bit of an expectation here, is that bullpens are there for you to be disappointed in. And I know that sounds kind of silly to say, but think about what a relief pitcher is in principle. I know that some guys are bred as closers, and you get the idea there. But on general, there's a pitcher. There's a starting pitcher. There's a relieving pitcher. A relieving pitcher is typically a pitcher who cannot shake it as a starter. And so because they couldn't shake it as a starter, they're put in the bullpen, so they only have to work for one inning at a time, and you know what I mean there. And they can go at roughly 100%. They can throw their pitches as hard as they need to, which doesn't necessarily make them bad. Look at, say, LaTroy Hawkins. Not an ideal relief pitch. He's been very good over his career, despite, blow-ups and things like that. But he was a starter with Minnesota. Look at Eric Gagne. One of the most dominating seasons from a relief pitcher ever, he's a failed starter. A lot of guys just, can't shake it as a starter, and when they can go that 100%, they're that much better. So the point is that the bullpen, with the exception of your Houston Streets, your bread closers, is going to be full of guys who are disappointments, for lack of a better word. You know, typically those are the back end of your bullpen guys. When I say back end, I mean, you know, your sixth inning guys, your mop up guys, things like that, your Matt Belisles. And I'm not literally trying to say I am disappointed with our entire bullpen. That's not what I'm saying. I mean, I just said I think we have a good bullpen, but I mean, this is another point too, that who actually has a bullpen that anyone's 100% satisfied with?
That's true, and I certainly agree. I don't mean to imply necessarily that I think that every player, every single pitcher in our bullpen needs to be, I don't know what you'd say. They have to be, you know, upper level talent that it is, you know, top of the line material. I guess my concern is that I don't have a lot of trust in many of these players, and we still want everybody in our pen to be effective. First of all, just going over the roster and our situation, I mean, just from the top, we already have pretty much all, well, first of all, we pretty much have our entire 25-man roster set already, barring injury, barring unforeseen circumstances of some other sort. Obviously, you have to have that little trademark asterisk at the top.
If the season started today, the 25th man has been decided, and it's Melvin Mora.
Just starting from scratch, looking at the roster, just sorting it out how it would work. Basically, we have six relief pitchers who are out of options and would have to make the team regardless, even if they weren't considered to be ready or some such. Those are Street, Betancourt, Morales, Flores, Belisle, and Buchholz.
Okay.
Buchholz obviously is not ready to pitch yet. He's going to be on the 60-day DL opening the season.
So let's rule him out of this.
Exactly.
For the time
being. So basically, assuming we have the other five, and they all kind of fit into certain roles already, we have you know, our closer, our setup. We have a long relief pitcher in Belisle, right, and we have two lefties in Flores and Morales on that list. So we have those five basically set, Buchholz on the DL, and then we have two spots. The obvious answers are Corpus, because we're paying him several million already, and he's got more experience than everybody else on the roster, and Matt Daly, who came up and succeeded in 09, and for the most part, you know, he had his ups and downs, and of course he had that fluke ankle issue when he got the bat thrown in his way.
That game there's nothing good about that afternoon at all.
I can't remember what else was going on. And was that weird game with the Pirates where they killed us with
that
10 run inning or whatever?
Yeah, they just that disgusting 10 run inning. We got flattened there, and then the umpire kicks the bat to get out of the way of the runner and ends up kicking it right under Matt Daly's feet. And good job, Blue.
Repressed memories, I think. So, I mean, really, those are the seven that I would say are in line for making the team. We do have a lot of minor league options available, and of course, I was kind of thinking about this, like just imagining what would happen if, say, Corpus's hamstring never healed, and he or Daly or somebody else was going to have to start on the DL or some such. We do have. We have Spire and Rincon as NRIs this year. And with Buchholz going on the 60-day, we really do have one open roster spot that isn't really showing up right now. But it's basically there. So we do have an unofficial 39-man, 40-man roster.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about depth. And, of course, we have minor league options, players like Shane Lindsay or
– or not to mention Sammy Deduno, Casey Weathers. I'm not sure how much of a fast track Rex Brothers is really on, but he's an option.
Is he? Is he an option already? Just –
I think he is, but that's also come – I mean, I don't know. I am being very bullish on Rex Brothers simply because of the fact they're saying he could be an impact player within soon.
And you mentioned Deduno. There's also, of course, with any of our giant overflow of AAA starters, we could pull one of them along for a short time, waiting for somebody else to heal as well.
Oh yeah, and that kind of comes back to the whole, you know, person not a starter, so they're a reliever instead. I mean, I'm not trying to say Esmiel Rogers is going to fail if he were the one in K. I'm just kind of saying if there's not a rotation spot for him, then, well, where's the next best spot to get him major league innings? The bullpen. So, yeah. And plus, with if Belial can, you know, re-harness any of that September magic he had and October magic where he was suddenly good, boy, that would be interesting to be able to have another, you know, leverage option and be able to bring up a AAA starter to be a mop-up guy. I mean, and once again, this is in the event of, you know, unforeseen injury, et cetera.
Or Belial failing, which is also
which
option.
Is very... I personally see Flores failing before Belial, but...
Flores is in a more important role. Well, okay.
It depends
scratch
on anybody
that. On yeah, exactly. To clarify, he's in a more important role for somebody to excel. Belial is the long reliever. He can have his off days because at least half the time, maybe more, that he's in the game, we're going to be 5-plus runs ahead or 5-plus runs behind.
That's it, yeah. He's going to be a big differential run, or big run differential pitcher. So if he stinks, oh well, you know. You're absolutely right there, whereas Flores will be expected to come in and he's expected to get outs, whereas with Belial, boy, it'd be nice if we could just get this over and done with.
Uh-huh. Of course, the only thing is Belial is, you know, if he's absolutely awful, I still don't want to use his long relief role as an excuse for keeping him around. I should point out that Flores and Belial both have very tiny major league contracts. I believe they're $650,000 and $850,000 respectively. And they were we to eat those contracts and cut them, if another team were to sign them, we would only be paying that amount minus $400,000, you know.
Or prorated $400,000.
Right. So, I mean, that's not a lot of money on the hook for us if we were to, say, have to cut Flores, you know.
No, but, relatively speaking, you're right here. I mean, I was kind of surprised at the magnitude of the figures, not so much because I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is a big major league contract. But I'm more thinking these are supposed to be guys, you know, kind of scrap heap esque pitchers, and then I mean, and Belial is nearly making $1 million off of us here.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, and just going back to revisit that, I remember you saying that you would have preferred that at least Flores and maybe both of them were simply outrighted, and as they weren't really important cogs to be worth keeping around, because I had said that I think the reason they got those contracts was they were both arbitration eligible. They didn't want to make a big deal out of either of them, so they basically said, hey, what's the lowest you would be willing to sign? And they gave those numbers, and they said, all right, we're done.
And if our organization is really quibbling over probably a sum of like $500,000 for two players, you know, if you know, cutting down what I think they should be paid and what they are being paid, if we're really that much worried about that sum of money, I think we have bigger problems. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that money, while it is still an important factor, we're willing to spend a little bit more to try to, you know, kind of fill in the gaps and, you know, make nice smooth edges and stuff like that, you know?
And it certainly didn't seem like either of those contracts made a significant dent in our off-season progress. We signed – we addressed every need that we really had. And speaking of that, how about that one site ranking us number 24 or something on the off-season performance list for not getting a starter?
Well, the thought is that they're forgetting so much that we did do. I mean, not to start a catcher debate or anything there, but they're citing that we downgraded Torrey Alba for Olivo. And yes, you can make a case either way. I'm not going to argue one way or another on it because I can see both sides of it. But if they're considering that to be the height of our offseason moves, they clearly weren't watching. We got Houston Street at a relative bargain. We may have overpaid a bit for Betancourt there, but he's a pretty essential cog to the team as well. We signed some key extensions. We picked up depth players, and it almost seems like we're being penalized for having a good team.
Well, I think it boils down more so than any sort of – I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would feel initially that this is just some sort of, you know, anti-West bias going on. It's almost to me more of just a complete lack of awareness about it.
That's more what it comes down to. I'm not literally saying that we're in the National League West, no one pays attention to us, which, I mean, you can make a case for that too, but – It wasn't all that exciting of an offseason for us. I mean, I kind of look at it like, say, a baseball team is a car. Well, some teams were missing, you know, suspension and engine steering column, stuff like that. We just kind of, you know, touched up paint and fixed a couple dents. Our car runs great still. It just went through a rough winter. Maybe a hailstorm. The only scrappy parts we went for, it's kind of like, well, you know, I like this, you know, 5-disc in-dash CD player, but I'd really rather have, you know, an MP3 player and audio in, you know. I mean, you see where I'm getting at here. It's kind of like, you know, I'd love to have Felipe Lopez, but you know what? Melvin Moore is going to do the job we need him to do, and that's really it. I mean, if our season is made or broken because we didn't sign Felipe Lopez, again, we have far, far bigger problems than just a free agent signing. To sum all that up, I think having a boring offseason, yes, we didn't win the offseason, but there's no awards given for best offseason. It's the one who has the best record at the end of the season and then, you know, wins the the 12 game, or not 12 games, 11 games necessary.
I guess now we can go through everybody and see and just talk about what we expect, what we want to see, and what we think about the way it stacks up. So this time going into the season, unlike the last couple of years, there hasn't been a closer battle going on. We had Corpus and Street last time. It was Corpus and Fuentes before. Now Street has the job. I am certainly not opposed to that at all, but I know a lot of people were, rightly or wrongly, kind of angry with Street after the postseason. I certainly wouldn't say that that's a reasonable conclusion, but do you feel that just handing him the job is the right move?
Absolutely. No questions asked about it. I mean, the guy showed himself to be He was one of the top five closers, depending on which metric you're looking at there. Saves are going to be more of a function of your team. How many three-run situations are you put into, stuff like, you get the idea there. But stuff like how well he did as far as, you know, just your ERA and the other advanced metrics that I've pushed over the last season here. Like, I think Broxton was better than Street, and I think Rivera. And there's probably someone else in there that I'm forgetting, but the point is, Houston Street over the course of the season was downright elite. Just a phenomenal season.
He fit in great with the team. There was a very short, rocky start of like a week, and then he was fine the rest of the time until the end.
Until the end, and then a lot of
which
people
is when
said
he got
this,
hurt. Yeah.
And a lot of people said this, and I'm kind of getting on board it. I mean, we obviously have no evidence either way yet, but I think he was hurt still. And I really do think that Houston Street did his level best,
or even if he wasn't hurt, he was rushed back and wasn't ready to return.
And I don't blame Street for that. I mean, this is where you could kind of, you know, throw out an old school argument of, well, you know, a real winner would have made himself right. Well, what exactly is he supposed to do? This is kind of an issue of management now. You know the players you have, you know their limitations. Do you really want to go in with a guy who's not broken back in from the DL yet? Well, I guess we said yes, and he did okay. But then he blew that game there, and so now Houston Street sucks. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Mariano Rivera gave up a walk-off home run to Ichiro. Do we all hate Mariano Rivera now? Is he not good anymore? Yeah, well, he did it when it counted. Yeah, I know he did it when it counted. It's just too circumstantial. Houston Street had a great season, and there's an injury thrown in there, too. That's gonna mess with someone a little bit there. And he's still young. He's still like 26.
Yeah, he's incredibly young. We got him at a decent rate for 3 years.
Yeah, I agree. Considering the numbers he put up for us.
Yeah.
If he hit the open market, I think he would have maybe made a little bit more than us. I mean, the closer market wasn't too – I mean, because you had Valverde out there. You had Brandon Lyon out there. I mean, granted, Lyon's nothing too special, but someone overpaid him.
Well, Street's still a ways away from free agency anyway.
Oh, yeah. You see what I'm saying. I mean, if we had somehow tried to do open market deal, I think someone mentioned this on the row as well, but they're saying, I think Street kind of got to look at the climate for closer contracts and said, you know what? I like it here. This is a good team. It's a good young team. I'm not like that one kid, and I'm not expected to be anything beyond just doing my job and fitting in well and enjoying myself. I think I'll go ahead and take their deal.
Yeah, and I'm glad he did, obviously. I think we're in complete agreement here. I certainly would hand him the job outright as well.
And I'll go on a tangent here for a second, but this is something that my dad always likes to bring up when we talk baseball, is that players who come here, even if it's on a short contract, yeah, I mean, they might leave to go try to get another contract after that, but they always say, I wouldn't mind coming back to Colorado at all. I liked the team. I liked the area, et cetera, et cetera.
Except
I
mean, Jeff Cirillo.
You had to bring up Jeff Cirillo, didn't you? And you kind of see my point, though. I think the organization has created a welcoming place for players to come, because even remember when we traded Holiday for Street, and there was rumors that we were going to bounce Street immediately and get, like, you know, Aaron Hyland and Pedro Feliciano. And aren't we glad that trade didn't go through? But O'Dowd called up Street and said, look, we're not – I mean, you read the papers. You know, you probably know what's going on here. I want you to know, as far as we're concerned right now, you are our guy. You are a Rocky. Welcome to the organization. And, I mean, they're trying to be honest with him, but at the same time welcoming. And I think that's a good thing about our organization, that – and our fan base, too, is we're pretty welcoming for people who come in, unless, you know, they're just ridiculously noted jerks.
Definitely. You hear from other organizations, you hear all these nightmare stories about how their organization just doesn't communicate with their players. I was thinking back earlier to the offseason with Kevin Correa. And
oh yeah,
how I found out. He was calling. He said he was trying to get in touch with him for like a week about his status, and nobody got back to him. And then all of a sudden, there's all these things about him being non-tendered, and of course, he ended up not being non-tendered. But I would say that seemed pretty irresponsible on the part of the organization.
The number of players you hear that are getting traded or DFA'd or whatever that they themselves find out through MLB trade rumors.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pathetic, you guys. What kind of an organization are you running? And maybe I'm just being a little smug about our team, but, well, you know what? I'm being smug about our team. Deal with it. Well, back, rolling back the clock a bit to the 06-07 offseason when Jason Jennings was traded to Houston. First of all, I go back to my dad because we really do talk a lot of baseball, but he was saying that deal went down awfully fast, awfully fast. And I kind of it did, and I think that's for two reasons. One, because why on earth would you ever turn down a package of Taylor Buchholz, Jason Hirsch, and Willie Taveras for a pitcher who just had a career year and probably isn't going to repeat it? That's a first and most obvious reason. But we're kind of wondering, because he was looking for Adam Eaton money, which is hilarious to think about now that we know what we know. But at the time, Adam Eaton was an effective starter, and Jennings wanted multi-years, like, you know, $8-plus million a year. And we're saying, I don't think so, big guy. And we're thinking that caused a bit of strife in the front office there. So we were like, go for it. Take him.
Speaking of Jennings, he just signed with Oakland.
I did. I mean, and it sounds good for him still, because, I mean, I always like to see former Rockies land somewhere, but I don't miss him at all. There's some fun memories about him, and yes, I will miss the memories, like his first major league start, you know, where he pitched a complete game and then they hit a home run. Good. I mean, good for Jennings, but... But anyway, so, I mean, back to the Street thing, I mean, the one concern I have for him, and it's... is the fact that he was a bit of a head case in Oakland. Granted, he was injured a bit in Oakland as well, but people are afraid that it's saying, oh, you had one good year of Houston Street, prepare for years and years of being a head case. I really am of the opinion that Oakland players are never completely comfortable with their playing status, unless they're like, you know, Giambi or someone who doesn't care what he's doing, he just wants to play, you know?
And I think Street's just simply too young to even begin to classify such a regularity of something. I mean, there's just too many variables to really consider.
I think that the constant propensity for Bean to make these crafty deals or whatever they are. I haven't been terribly, you know, impressed with anything that he's done the last 2 years here. But the point is, I mean, considering he wheels and deals and makes these really interesting trades to try to cut costs and stuff like that, I wouldn't be surprised if Houston Street was just kind of constantly, you know, sitting there with the giant blade hanging over his chair, like the was a Greek myth or something like that. Whatever. My point is that I can't imagine that Oakland players aren't somewhat worried about their job security after a couple years.
And that, of course, goes back to what I was saying before about Street feeling comfortable here. I think that he always seemed, not just in personality, but just in the way he was used, just from the technical standpoint, he always seemed to be in the right spot at the right time until when he got hurt.
Yeah.
And I mean, except for there was that one crazy week where we used him like five times in a row. We said, okay, we're not going to do it anymore. We've pushed our luck with him enough. Didn't he get a save in every game we played against the A's?
So yeah, the three games in Oakland, the first one 4-2, win Hamill, loss Braden, save Street. Second game, 11-9, win De La Rosa, loss Cahill, save Street. And the next final game, 3-1, win Cook, loss Mazzaro, save Street.
That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah. And then we used him again for the Angels right after that, I think. And then we just said no more. He's out for a while.
We played the Angels the week before there.
Oh, maybe it was the Angels leaking onto the A's. I can't remember.
Street didn't record a save with Los Angeles against the Angels.
But did he get in the game, though?
That's a good question. I'd have to pull up the box scores there. But the point is, yes, I agree. We did push our luck during the season. I do remember a stretch there why are we consistently using Street? But then again, this is also, you know, end of June here, so pretty close. There was only about a month more of not having a lot of trustworthy guys when we acquired Rafael Betancourt.
So, moving up one inning, we've got Rafael Betancourt back. Of course, he accepted the arbitration offer we gave him, probably wisely accepted it last off-season. Well, last off-season, this off-season.
We're getting that close, man. It feels like it. He's a relatively recent acquisition of the Rockies, even if it was a mid-season thing last year. And he's a very solidifying figure in the bullpen. We didn't have to wonder who was going to set up for Street anymore. We knew who was going to set up for Street anymore, and now it's Betancourt. And it was interesting with Betancourt because, I mean, we were Jeff Jabberwocky had a lot to say about
Jeff Jabberwocky.
I just call him Jabs, even if he is Jeff Aberle now. I'm calling him Jabs. Anyways, the point is that he was against the signing because, you know, citing the fungibility of relievers, which in a sense I agree on, and I feel as if we splurged and got a luxury item. You know, I think the saying "buy nice or buy twice." You know, we just went with a guy that we felt worked, we felt, you know, was a good fit in our bullpen. So we didn't pay a super premium for him, but we definitely gave him, you know, a bigger contract than you see a lot of people give a non-closing reliever. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, so am I. He did great for us. Have him back. Of course, we signed him for 2 years, I think, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. I see the Betancourt thing more being, look, we'll give you 2 years if you will accept our yearly rate.
Moving up, we have the seventh inning, which I guess right now is some combination of Corpus, Morales, maybe Daly. And, of course, we talked about Corpus a little bit earlier, but he has a lot to prove right now. He went from very high, you know, he earned himself, after that 2007, a huge contract and a whole lot of faith from the front office that hasn't really paid off yet.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that, you know, the Corpus issue doesn't really more accurately, the Corpus contract doesn't really make me too mad because it's not really that much money that has been wasted. Obviously, it's still a disappointing showing from him so far. And, you know, if you can chalk up, like you were doing earlier, his first couple years to or his last couple of years to injury and to coasting, then hopefully he can get over that and return to at least some level of form.
My hope for Corpus is that the organization plays him smart and plays him cautiously and doesn't just say, hey, you had one excellent season for us. You're now part of the bridging closing staff. I don't know if I'm comfortable with just, you know, just handing him the seventh inning quite yet. I really don't think so.
Right, which is why I'd say put him in the mix. You know, I wouldn't say Corpus, you're going at every seventh inning. I think the seventh inning kind of needs to be an amalgam of these pitchers right now.
That should be the real competition. I mean, it's almost like we have a closer competition, but it's a seventh inning competition now.
I suppose. Again, now we're getting to the point where we're talking about players that I really don't have a lot of trust in. And this is why I almost wish. I mean, look, I know that I sound like a broken record a lot, especially on the forums when bringing up issues I have with certain players about consistency and how I say it's not as important as everybody seems to think it is. That's just kind of the position I take often. But I think in this case, really, I don't know if we need one pitcher to always be the guy who goes out in the seventh inning. If there's some sort of situational reason to put Morales in over Corpus or Daly in over Morales or anything like that, I'm really not – I mean, if I'm wrong, go ahead and tell me. But I really don't see a reason why we need to pick one.
No, you don't necessarily have to pick one either. I mean, it kind of depends on how we want to handle the players. And I'll go ahead and, you know, take the liberty of jumping to Morales here. It depends on where we see him still. And this is, again, one of the reasons that I've been, you know, adamant might be the wrong word, but I strongly suggest trading him as long – well, he still has value as a potential starting pitcher. Because if we just say, okay, you're bullpen now, well, I feel like we missed a boat. You know what I mean? But if we're going to try to, you know, not ever going to try to groom him as being a, you know, a future closer, I would almost suggest saying, hey, here's – it's like giving a kid a weekly chore. Like, it is your job, your important job to make sure the dishwasher is empty. And your job is the seventh inning. It's not the highest leverage inning right now, but we want to get you used to saying, this is my inning. I own this inning. And so, I mean, so if we end up with him as a full-time bullpen pitcher, maybe in a year or two here, it's like the eighth inning is now your job. The closing position is now your job. You know what I mean? Kind of giving him a sense of ownership of his own task, not just, hey, Morales, you're up.
Right. Well, for me, this kind of goes back to what I was talking about with the whole consistency issue. I really don't know if it's tangibly easy to find material that really backs up that sort of how relevant is it or how important is it to a player's mentality that they know that they have a very specific spot that they have to occupy every time.
Well, I'd argue the eighth and ninth are pretty, you know, this is your job.
Right. And I won't argue against that unless I go off on some devil's advocate argument, which I would do on the comment section, but I won't bother doing it here. Because, again, I really don't know. I don't claim to say that, oh, it's a complete waste of time. There shouldn't be. Don't even bother offering him. Or I obviously don't take the position that with somebody like Morales, you have to give them that chore. I just don't know. I'm not 100% sure. Because, you know, honestly, I kind of like Morales where he is right now. I don't really feel like – and, again, this is a feeling. It's not really any sort of, you know – profession based on or any sort of statement based on any sort of statistics, but I'm just saying that just from that perspective, I'm okay with where he is right now, not as a starter, not necessarily as a late inning bullpen guy either, but he could be kept on track for any of them. And while I certainly recognize that that could certainly be detrimental to his development, I don't necessarily know that it has to be.
Well, see, I'm arguing the Morales case from two different angles here, because there's one case where I say I don't trust him any further than I can throw him, and I will stand by that any day of the week and twice on Sunday. I mean, I'm not trying to say, you know, Sean Chacon levels of mistrust, but I just don't trust him. I think he's too much of a head case still, which, again, goes back, I think we should trade him, but we've discussed that a lot on, well, whenever I bring it up, it always ends up being, you know, double-digit comment discussion. Anyways, so as long as the organization is not going to try to trade him and try to glean any of that potential starter value and is committed to keeping him around in an unspecified role, which is looking more and more and more like bullpen, especially with the pitching depth coming up that is more groomed to be starters, I don't know. I would just like to see them try – because, I mean, the issue with Morales is obviously he's a head case. And you can kind of – see, when I say head case, I mean that kind of – I say that synonymously with inconsistency. Not so much Morales as swearing on the mound or anything like, you know, getting angry DLR.
You're saying that he is, as a head case, he doesn't have a great deal of consistency in his own mind, that mm-hmm. he can get unsettled very easily, and that leads to a lack of consistency in his performance.
And I feel like I'm talking about a child here, and which is just absolutely silly considering the guy's like 3 years younger than me. But, I mean, I think you kind of see what I'm building at here, that if we can kind of say this is where we want you within our organization, then I think that he might be able to focus on something and try to excel at it.
Moving on to Daly. Daly has acquired a great deal of fan appreciation on Purple Row, and I agree certainly that he should be first in line to inherit that seventh bullpen spot, both in terms of what he can do, what I think he can do, and what he's done. However, I also don't necessarily think that he's going to be around for a great deal of time this season, specifically because unless something's wrong with Corpus, I think Daly is the one who gets optioned away when Buchholz comes back.
Well, I think that's exactly where I figured you were going with that, and it makes the most sense. Really, if you ask me what I expect out of Daly this season, I'd say growing pains, because he had his first year in the majors and he did very well for himself, in my opinion. But half of his success came from that crafty delivery of his, and eventually hitters are going to learn that. And there's probably a reason he was a non-prospect kind of guy. You know what I mean? He wasn't exactly on our top 10, And I'm wondering how much of his successful season was, hey, we've never seen this guy before. Whoa, where's he throwing that from? And this season, like, oh, I know where this guy's coming from. Crack, out of the park. I get the impression that he is going to fall on his face isn't the right word, because in a guy in his position, like, he has nothing to lose at this point, because, you know, best case scenario, he stays in the majors. Every other scenario means he has an option year, he falls apart, whatever. He might as well just, you know, everyone should try their hardest. You see what I'm getting at there. But, I mean, with Daly, just, you know, any time he spends in the majors is just gravy, considered where, you know, prospect sheets would suggest.
Yeah, he's always kind of been that guy, because he wasn't drafted. He signed as a non-drafted free agent. So right from the get-go, you know, nobody – he wasn't on anybody's radar. And then he kind of stayed that way through our organization until he started getting some – I guess his consistency bought him some NRI invites, and he ended up joining – the team last year, because he had gotten off to a great start in AAA, and he just stuck. I mean, he got hurt, but he just stuck.
Yeah. Well, the guy has good stuff. You look at the strikeout numbers. I mean, even if you discount the numbers, if you nerf him a bit because he has that whole, oh, you hitters have never seen me before, it's not as if he's not striking them out still. Like getting odd bounces and stuff like that would be one thing, but like, his fielding independent numbers look pretty solid. Now, I would be remiss to say that he's just gonna go ahead and completely repeat 2009, but I mean, I don't think he's gonna fall completely off a cliff.
What does it mean if he goes out there and has a fantastic season? He doesn't show any signs of, you know, a loss of progress, and he just continues to make steps and adjusts to things. Does he become then a somebody who needs to be considered keeping around when we're looking at getting Taylor Buchholz back, or is the convenience of losing him still going to outweigh any other option that we have?
Well, we got to remember too that Buchholz was coming off of it was Tommy John, correct?
I think so. I mean, he's been gone for a significant amount of time. He hasn't pitched. Yeah. I mean, he hasn't pitched in game in a year. Well, and by the time he gets back, it'll be in almost a year and a half. He thinks he's on track for June. Latest is July, I guess.
On track is one thing, but let's remember that Buchholz has not had a very successful career up until 2008. And much as I would like to have Buchholz come back in his near closing form, let's be realistic here. I mean, I don't see it happening either. And I'm not trying to say I don't think he's learned anything or whatever. I just think that he's going to be very, very, very rusty. His minor league rehab will really kind of have to, you know, paint the picture of what we want to do with him and where we want to put him, because
I suppose really more so, since he's already throwing, I think really how long he's out depends more on when they're ready to bring him back than waiting for things to heal or things to redevelop.
Well, here's the other thing to think about, too. We are, I mean, Daly seems, because he has that option year left, he seems to be the obvious bit for some sort of demotion if Buchholz, you know, looks like he's ready to come back and start firing bullets. And the problem, obviously, is that we have money tied into our other two guys who would be the next in line in terms of Flores and Belisle, but I don't know. I mean,
well, I don't think they'd cut Flores for Buchholz simply because of the role he has. They'd probably option Corpus down first.
We have money tied up, and we have lack of options in other players. And it's going to make a very interesting and very good problem to have. Hey, look, we have two good guys, you know, and I'm still counting Weathers into the mix here.
Do you think we could see him this year? I mean, as more than a spring training call-up? Or, a September call-up?
We need to see injury happen to really see Weathers. I'm counting him in the mix because I've read reports that saying don't count him out for 2010. There are reports saying don't count him out for 2008, and then he got hurt. So, I mean, the point was that Tommy John is such a successful surgery, you know, relatively speaking, that if he is... If they say his rehab is going well, it's probably going well, but I've also heard a lot of reports of his rehab is going very slowly. Like I said, it's good problems. We're going to have to start – I mean, I wonder where it's going to come down to when we start debating dollars and cents versus his actual talent. I don't think that – I think – I get the impression that Belisle and or Flores would clear waivers if that came down to it. I get the impression that if Daly forces our hand – I would hesitate on, you know, I would see what we could do with Buchholz in terms of, you know, not starting him, or not bringing him up until we are absolutely 100% sure and someone else forced the issue.
So the last two that we haven't talked about, well, we have talked about everybody, but Belial and Flores are kind of our last two. They'll be the long relief guy and the lefty specialist. They would obviously be the two I trust the least, but I think both of them can do their jobs, I think. I think they can. That doesn't mean they will. I think they can.
I'm just hoping that Tracy is very aware of Flores' capabilities and the reason we brought him back.
I think I mentioned that the last time we talked about Flores was that he has to be managed as a lefty specialist, not as a one-inning pitcher. He's kind of the opposite of Jeremy Affeldt. Affeldt was a one-inning pitcher who did great when he was given an inning, but when he would come in with inherited runners, when Hurdle would say, "I want you to get this lefty out," he'd fail every time.
Mm-hmm.
And they just never learn. Basically, it has to be the opposite. Don't be tempted unless everybody else in the bullpen is gone and it's like the 23rd inning. Don't put him out there.
The only time I'd ever want to see Randy Flores not just facing a single lefty as if he's just, you know, getting some work in and kind of, you know, backing up Belial, you know. Say someone gets shelled and four, and then we get two or three out of Belial and then maybe one out of Flores and then just throw in whoever else hasn't worked in a while.
Well, that ate up a lot of time, so I think right now I'm going to go straight into talking about spring training and what's going on. So this is going to be released, this podcast. You'll be listening to it on Monday the 1st. First game is Thursday the 4th. Unfortunately, I was hoping that MLB would have released their media guide by now. They haven't. I'm mad at them. I said on Purple Row that I was going to post for everybody a full media guide for every game. I mean, we have all the information for our broadcasts. We have FSN. We have KOA. But a lot of the games are going to be covered by opponents' stations only, and I was hoping that we would have that set. So I don't know yet which games that aren't covered by FSN or KOA or MLB Network are going to have television or audio feeds available, but I will get everybody that information when I get it. In terms of games, Thursday the 4th, we're at Arizona 105. That is going to be covered by KOA, and it's, I believe, the only non-weekend KOA game the entire spring training, or at least until the very end. The 5th is a split squad game. We're at LAA, the Angels, and at San Francisco, both at 1:05 p.m. No coverage, no local coverage for that. But there might be, again, there might be radio or video feed from somewhere else if people are interested. I'll get on that. Saturday the 6th, Milwaukee. That's our first home game. And then Sunday the 7th is another split squad. We play at Arizona, and Arizona plays at us. And then up until then, the last one, or I guess that's through the weekend. So since we air on Monday, we can cover the next week on the next podcast. So that's the way all that stacks up for now. So there's six games over 4 days. Interesting. I hadn't really thought about that.
I'm very excited. Well, you got to remember, too, this is also the beginning of spring training. The rosters are going to obviously be pared down over the next month here, because you know that as you look at the you know, the transactions, you see team option player to minor league camp, team or assigned player to minor league camp, team assigned player to minor league camp. And we basically end up with kind of the 40-man roster during the last, like, 2 weeks there, and then that gets even pared down to roughly the 25 with a couple of, you know, extra guys thrown in there. But, I mean, yeah, that's why you're going to see so many games, especially the split squad games. You're going to have, you know, Helton at first, and then, you know, who knows at second, and Gomez at short, Stewart at third. And the point is completely mixed up teams, because you're going to have guys you're not going to see for another 2 years here.
And I also forgot to mention when I was going over the games, the home game at Milwaukee, as well as the home game on the 7th, not the away game, but the home game, will both be on KOA.
Oh, very good.
So the 4th, the 6th, and one of the games on the 7th all have local radio coverage. I believe that, if I recall from last year, the Angels radio station broadcasts like every game they do. So I would say that LA's game will probably be on the radio. I hope we get to hear something from the San Francisco game, because that is the Jeff Francis game where we're going to get our first look at him, and it would be cool to hear somebody at least talking about how he's doing.
Isn't that exciting to hear that Jeff Francis is back, you know, in a pitching role?
By the time you next hear from us, we will have played 6 games of baseball. And, I mean, this is spring training. We're not going to care how many games we win. We started off like 0-8 last year or something.
No, yeah, the spring training games mean nothing.
Well, they mean something in terms of what you are getting glances of, the end result.
Spring training game results mean nothing.
Oh, I still don't agree with that. But
I do agree. What are they supposed to mean?
I just explained. They mean that they give you a glimpse of what you can expect. They show you progress that people are making. When somebody's trying, you know, A pitch instead of B pitch on some day, you get to see how effective that pitch is, right? I mean,
well, that's an individual result. I'm saying that the Rockies lose a game 10-8. Is that more should be expecting 10-8 games all season? No.
Correct.
If the Rockies were, like 20-2 over spring training, does that mean we're going to be a 95-win team? No, it doesn't mean anything.
The score and the runs and all that, you're right. That's why I said that the record doesn't mean anything. I was just talking about they're not – I just get the impression when people say, oh, they're meaningless, they kind of just I just don't agree with it in that sense, because I think there's a lot of meaning that can be taken from watching these and paying attention to them and seeing how people are doing.
Well, that's absolutely the case. Yes, looking at every individual game, you can see what individual players are doing or how a certain aspect of the game is working, but very unfinished product.
It certainly shouldn't be used as evidence for something. I mean, especially at the beginning. We're a full month away from playing any actual games. So I completely agree with you that saying something like, oh, we've lost our first 4 games, we're screwed, is completely ridiculous. But I guess at the same time, I feel like they should be scrutinized to a degree, and I think performance by individual players in individual situations is worth paying attention to.
I guess my thought is if we lose the first 4 games because Alan Johnson came in and blew 2 games in a row or something like that.
Thankfully, Alan Johnson is not at spring training.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe he'll get called up for an emergency start when we have nobody
else. Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to pitch a complete game shutout. It'll be perfect.
Yep, and then everybody will love him again, and he'll make it up to number 12 on our perps list.
I don't know why he's even on perps list. The guy is – no, he's a non-prospect.
I think that about wraps it up. You have anything else you want to go into?
Really not much. It's 1-2. Canada's up 2-1, and there's about 2.5 minutes left. 2 minutes left in the game.
Well, I should let you go off and get to that then. I think then on behalf of myself and Andrew, we'll see you next week.